All right. Good evening, everybody. This is the Chris Break Show. What the hell's that? All right, I'm Chris Break. I'm sitting here with... Shit. I almost dropped my... Well, I did smash my ukulele. It's not broken. I'm Chris Break. I'm sitting here with my good friend, John Rapp.
Hey, guys.
How you doing tonight, sir?
Man, I'm doing pretty good. This switch to October is kind of giving me a jar.
I know. I do the artificial shot of, you know, the artificial line of Coke in my head before I start this show. You know? Like, if anybody could have heard me off mic, I would have, you know, I was like, come on, John. We got 1 minute to go. Why is that noise still playing? Yeah. We have an awesome guest today, a man named Warren Rodwell. We're going to get to him in a few minutes. That guy's a maniac. He was kidnapped for 15 months, held hostage. That's all I'm telling you. We'll let him tell the rest to us. But we have some good news. Some people have been talking about the Chris Break Show.
Yeah.
Which is pretty good. That's rare. Well, I take that back. It's not rare. I don't want to beat myself up all the time. What's his name? David Beecroft. Beecroft. Or as Dale J. Gordon calls him, David Beercroft. He's a friend of ours on WordPress. And he told us that we beat ourselves up too much, or we... what was the phrase he used? We're too modest with our show. He said our show is really good, but we always act like it's not.
Yeah.
Which I think is better. We don't do it jokingly. There's always room for improvement, but I don't want to be one of those cocky assholes. I don't want to be one of the assholes that, man, I told myself I wasn't going to cuss. I didn't tell you that, John. I told myself I wasn't going to cuss at the beginning of the show, but I'm already saying asshole. I don't think you're allowed to say that. Anyway, I don't want to be the jerk that is like, nah, we're all right. We're all right. Nah, it's no, thank you. Yeah, we're okay when we're awesome. But I also don't want to be awesome and be like, oh, we're the best. You know?
Yeah.
There's a fine line. And even if we are the best, which we are, I'm not gonna feel that way, because there's always room for improvement. But we did get some nice kind words from a gentleman named Marty O'Sullivan, who is the host of the Marty O Show, which can be heard on Several AM frequencies across the United States, as well as a bunch of other internet radio stations, as we are too. We're on a bunch of internet radio stations, but our home base is RadioFubar.com, where we are live right now. But we also, our show gets syndicated to other stations that does replays, and he's on one of those stations. And I guess John contacted him via WordPress.
Yeah, right. Send him a message.
Yeah, which he thought that was me.
People always, they get confused. They think that Chris does all the social media.
Happens all the time.
Understandable. It's totally understandable.
Yeah. I usually only respond when someone actually says my name.
Right.
You know, but who knows if they're actually talking to John, but they think he's me. So who knows? You know, it gets confusing at times. But either way, it leads to situations where Marty O'Sullivan is giving you a review on his show. And I thought I'd share that for you because it makes me feel good. Want to hear that, John?
Yeah, man, I do want to hear this.
I like this guy. Well, you have to. Hello?
The Chris Break Show. I've been trying to listen to it, and I never catch it when I'm available to catch it. So I go to a site out of frustration because I wanted to do this for the past 2 weeks. I go to the... ChrisBreakShow.com. Beautiful site. As all these, I'm going to listen to it. I can play his podcast. So I'm going to listen to one. I'm going to just do it here. It's not live, but I'm going to listen to it. It's a recent show. So I put it on, and it's him and another guy talking, and I'm being thoroughly entertained. I think there's a lot of humor in it. These guys got good sense of humor. Then I catch, as I'm listening to this show, I'm only maybe 10 minutes into the show, and I look at down below, and I see something. It, by the way, it took me to a Podomatic, chrisbreakshow.podomatic.com. Go there. This is where I saw it. So I'm listening to the show, and this is where I saw it. Right below to the show I'm listening to, he's interviewing Coolio. I said, wow, I want to hear that. I click immediately on that show, and I listen to the show in its entirety. Here there was, I think there was a girl sitting in with them on this show, where I don't think it was the one before. It was just him and a guy. It seems like there's like a lot of people that come in and out of this show. I kind of get that feeling, but Chris Brake is consistent. He's always there. Well, obviously, the Chris Brake Show. So I'm listening to the Chris Brake Show to this Coolio interview, and it was fantastic. It was fantastic. A little humor throughout the whole thing. Coolio, he's just gets done driving his girlfriend at the airport, and one guy says, I got to ask you this. What was that whole thing about with Weird Al Yankovic? And I always wanted to know. It's funny, this guy asked what I wanted to know. And that's a sign of a good interviewer, in my opinion. Not like Barbara Walters. If you were a tree, what tree would you be? This guy asked a question I have always wanted to know. And Coolio says, I was stupid. He was like admitting it was. But what I'm trying to tell you is the 405 Media has Chris Brake, the Chris Brake Show. Look for it. I want it. Look for the Friddle. There are other shows. I got to get all these names. I got to jot them all down. The Chris Brake Show. Entertaining, funny, intelligent, and good interviews. Check them out on the 405media.com, chrisbrakeshow.com, chrisbrakeshow.podomatic.com. Alternative talk, I'm telling you, yeah, sure. If you want to listen to Opus and Andy, and yeah, I have. Never really got into them, though, really. Not like Howard Stern. I was a big Howard Stern fan. Haven't listened to Howard Stern in years. But the Chris Brake Show is pretty darn good. And I'm just saying, if you catch them on the 405, see if you can find out if there's a schedule there or something like that, or if you get them on rebroadcast. I think Chris Brake said to me, I think, and don't hold me to this, I'm going by memory, my age, my memory isn't what it used to be. As a matter of fact, I never had a good memory, although I don't remember that. I think he said he was on midnight. I don't know if he meant every night or a particular night of the week, but do check out the 405media.com. And as far as the 405media.com goes, as I always say, you're going to bookmark this site. Just spend 10 minutes on it. Chris Brake Show, Friddle, any show, 10 minutes on it, you will bookmark that site. Well, all right. I think I rambled enough today, didn't I?
Hey.
I haven't had a show.
I hope that Frank from the Radio Fubar is okay with this guy going on and on about the 405 Media, which he is right. 405 Media is great. Radio Fubar is great. We are live on RadioFubar.com every Thursday night, 8 p.m. Eastern. And I guess on 4 or 5 at midnight, is that what he said?
Yeah, midnight, Monday through Friday. Check us out on the 4 or 5 Media.
He knows more about it than I do.
Yeah, I told him midnight.
How do they do that? Is it the same show?
Yeah, it's the most current show that I have uploaded to them, that we have sent them, you know.
Nice. So it just replays.
Yeah, it's just replays throughout the week. Usually it's a couple weeks behind. You know, I think there were a couple episodes behind. So if you want to get the fresh stuff, you got to listen live on Radio Fubar. But you can catch us on 405 Media, too. Lots of cool talk show folks on there. The Marty O Show. Podomatic.com, The Marty O Show. Weebly.com. Check him out.
Yeah, he has good taste.
Yeah. Clearly he has good taste.
Now, I wonder if when he was referring to Opie and Anthony, if he called them Opus and Andy on purpose.
He totally did call them Opus and what is it, Andy?
Yeah.
Opus and Andy?
I think he did. I'm not knocking Opie and Anthony. I've never listened to him. He said they're not his thing. But I haven't really met too many people who are diehard fans. But maybe it's because I'm a Howard fan, so I guess they don't run in the same circles. Plus, we're in Indianapolis, and they're all on the East Coast.
It's a, you know, what is it? Opie and Anthony, are they Howard's like competition or something?
I think they were. I mean, they were just another local station.
Oh, okay.
And, you know, he probably ragged on them like he rags on everybody. And then they probably actually ragged back, which people rarely do. And then he probably buried them, you know?
It sounds like Marty
O.
As much
as he could.
It sounds like Marty O. was not a fan of Opus and Anthony.
He called them Opus and Andy. That's good. Maybe that's a common joke that I'm just now catching up to. Maybe everybody calls him Opus and Andy.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
I don't know. I could see that. I could see that. And I'll take anybody comparing me to Howard Stern any day of the week.
Yeah, he did do that. We're going to have to isolate that clip of...
Yeah. Well, he didn't technically do it, but he did it in a roundabout way.
Yeah, no, he totally did.
Which I appreciate.
He's a fan of Howard. He's not a fan of Opus. He likes us.
Yeah, he likes us. We like him, you know. Bada, bada, bada. Yeah. Oh, man. So I got this... I'm smoking a Vuse e-cigarette. I got all these e-cigarettes now just coming out my... My ying.
The yin yang?
My yin. And I don't know what the story is with them, but they're all free. They just keep sending me these coupons in the mail. And I just can't get it under control yet. You know, I haven't even tried. Although it finally occurred to me that I have all these free e-cigarettes because I told John a couple weeks ago. I said, hey, man, see if you can get us a sponsor to, you know, give us free e-cigarettes and all the, you know, startup kits and everything so I can really get this smoking under control. And then it just dawned on me that I already have all this stuff because the major corporations like Marlboro and Winston or whoever, you know, Camel, like all the competitors, they're all sending out these free e-cigarettes constantly. So I'm ready to roll. I'm ready to rock.
How do you like that Vuse?
It was a little harsh. I believe I like the Mark 10 better.
Really? See, I haven't tried the Mark 10 yet, although they have sent me quite a few of them.
They should be paying us for these reviews.
Yeah, yeah.
But I will tell you that, yeah, I don't... It's not too bad, but I'm happy that I looked up tutorial to find out that... Because I always thought you had to buy, like, the $100 starter kit, and then, you know, then you can get, like, the $8 bottles of juice, you know?
Okay, of the refills?
Yeah, the vapor stuff.
Okay.
Yeah, it looks like a little Visine bottle. But then it occurred to me that I looked up a tutorial on YouTube, and I can just... do it all myself. I can go buy the $8 bottle and then open up these Mark 10 cartridges and fill it up with that jazz.
Oh, wow.
The poor man. I don't know if that's the equivalent of smoking cigarette butts in the e-cig world. We'll see how it goes. I imagine the flavor should be pretty good.
Have you tried it yet? Have you tried refilling?
No. I need to buy the bottle. But, I mean, just a bottle that will last forever, and it costs the same amount as it costs to buy two of these cartridges.
Mm-hmm. It was just one of the disposable e-cigs is almost $10, so.
Jeez Louise.
Yeah, that's two packs of cigarettes. Well, down here in the East Coast, it's like $10 for one pack of cigarettes.
I don't, you know, everybody says that. Everyone says, you know, they're more expensive on this coast. I didn't experience that. I think it's, because that's how it is in Indianapolis, you know. You say you buy a pack of cigarettes here, it's $6.
Right.
You know, I think that's the state minimum. And then everyone says, oh, in New York, they're $10. That's bullshit. I went to New York, and I was able to get cigarettes for the exact same price.
Really?
Yeah. Same with when I was on Venice Beach living there for a little bit. It was the same thing. You know, everybody says, oh, they're super expensive in California. And you get there. No, you just need to know where to go.
Okay.
If you're on Venice Beach, like literally on Venice Beach, you know, and you go up to buy a pack of cigarettes, it's clearly going to be $9 or $10.
Okay.
But if you walk two blocks over to a little gas station, they're going to be regular prices.
Oh, okay.
You know, so maybe people, I know in New York, I think we were in Union Station, tried to buy a pack of cigarettes, it was $15.
Oh, whoa.
Yeah, but if you go to a bodega or something, you're going to find them at normal prices, I imagine.
Okay, so just shop around, you New Yorkers, because I've heard a lot of New York people say, wow, you guys are lucky, you know, it's cheap cigarettes down there.
I could be wrong. But I'm pretty positive that it's not that much different.
Just depends on where you go.
Or what brand you want to smoke.
Oh, okay.
You know, I think I knocked it down. I think I was smoking Waves when I was in California.
Okay. So
have you ever heard of Waves?
I thought it was a quit smoking cigarette.
I don't think so.
Okay.
I think you're thinking of Unique or something. What's the one, or Quantum? What's the one that has the three steps?
That's the one I'm talking about, because you can get those sometimes for discount because they're trying to get rid of them.
Yeah, I think that was not Waves. I'm pretty sure.
Okay, Waves is just like a generic.
Yeah. I don't even know, man. Yeah, I was smoking ways. Shit, in Illinois, I was smoking pyramids.
Oh, okay.
You know about pyramids?
I've heard of that, yeah.
Those things are, they're weird. You never heard of them, but as soon as you buy one, some old timer will look at you, and you can tell it's like they're going back to Korea or something in their head. Like, they'll look at you and go, that's what I smoked in prison. Those are the prison cigarettes. Those are the only cigarettes you can get in prison.
Oh, okay. That's their currency is waves.
No, pyramids.
Oh, pyramids. Pyramids. Okay.
Yeah, get it right there, guy.
That seems like a total ripoff of Camel and their pyramid-ish logo.
They do have a pyramid.
Yeah.
They do have a pyramid. Are there any, we got to get Warren Rodwell on the phone here, but are there any cigarettes brands that have names of animals other than Camel?
I don't know.
That needs to be one of those stupid quizzes that pops up on Facebook. You know, one of those stupid things that says, bet you can't name a state that starts with letter A. It's like, are you an idiot? Arkansas, Alabama?
Alabama, yeah.
You know, like, that's all I can think of. But that's two.
That's two, yeah.
It's always like, think of a state that has an I in it. You can't do that. It's like, I'm living in Indianapolis, moron.
I think some of those cigarettes are just repackaged versions of, from, like, the Camel people and stuff like that, too. So that might be another reason why it looks like a knockoff.
I can see that. I always have a, I've never smoked them, but I've always had a respect in my heart for the Winston brand.
Yeah, I used to, that's what I used to smoke because it said like no bull, you know, no additives or whatever, which I don't even know how true that is, but that appealed to me.
Oh, do we need to talk any more about cigarettes? Let's get this Warren Rodwell gentleman on the phone. What were all those beeps coming out of your computer over there earlier?
It was Skype. I just killed all those sound effects. So there should be no more.
Oh, nice. You're a busy man over there.
Yeah, busy man on the console. Do you want to play this video of him from the news?
Is there any way you can play it while we're calling him?
Yeah, yeah.
Because usually it takes a while. But yeah, play it. Just time it up. Play it. Once it gets to like the 20-second mark, then give him a call.
Okay. Here's Warren Rodwell. Is a video that he sent to the world after he was kidnapped.
This is our guest on the Chris Breaks Show.
Rodwell from Australia, being held captive by this group since December 5, 2011. To my family, please do whatever to raise the $2 million they are asking for my release as soon as possible. To the Australian Embassy here in the Philippines, this is your constituent appealing for his life, his safety.
Wow. That was pretty intense.
That was intense. Warren Rodwell, and I believe we're connected with him right now. Hello, Warren?
You know, this happens from time to time when you're live on RadioFubar.com. You know, that's the other thing. I don't feel bad when the shiz goes wrong because we're on Radio Fubar. You know, so if we screw something up,
okay.
You know, that's the whole concept. And, you know, just if you are listening live, stick around for Lotus Cast. Following us, and Monday is the wheelbarrow full of dicks. What time do they start?
I am not sure. I'm sorry. I'm not sure about that. There's so many shows. There's so many great shows on Radio Fubar.
Yeah, you listen to a lot of them.
Warren says he can hear us, but we can't hear him.
Hmm. Ooh.
Oh, hello?
I like that sound. Well, kind of. It's a little too moist.
I turned the sounds back on because that's the only change I made. So I turned them back on.
No, sir.
Oh, I see him now.
All right. Describe what he looks like for the audience.
I believe he has glasses and a light behind him.
What color is the light? Is it halogen?
Yeah, we thought we were all prepared for this, but apparently there is some kind of Skype issue.
Son of a gun. Son of a gun. Well, speaking of Australia, I've been going back and watch Lost. I think I'm on like my fourth viewing of Lost.
Wow, like, that's a long show.
The entire series. It's getting insane. You know? Because I don't know about you, but at the end of the night, I like some media. I like some white noise, or not even just white noise. I like something playing while I go to sleep. It can't be music. It's got to be a show I've seen, so. Or a movie. And I just let that roll. So I'm not actually sitting there watching it. Well, I am, but you know how that goes. But it's all starting to come together and make a lot more sense. You know?
And what it, Lost is?
Yeah, even the second time, it didn't make too much more sense. You know, and I don't even know, to be honest with you, if that's a show even trying to worth figure out, because some of the writing on it's pretty sloppy, you know, where you think it's some great thing, and it's really annoying that they, that everybody knew, like, within the first season, what the twist was, you know? Everybody knew how it was going to end. Everybody knew what was going on. But then the team denied it. You know, the creator said, oh, no, that's not what's going to happen.
Right, right.
We got a huge plan for you. And then they twist you and jerk you around. And then at the end of it, that's what happens. And it's obvious throughout the whole thing, you know? But then they try and throw you off and act like that's not the case. But it's... And then things just don't add up. It's a very frustrating show if you try and understand it. But then the more you... But there's always something to see. I'm a glutton for punishment when it comes to watching it.
Chris, can you hear me?
Oh, my gosh.
All right, we got Warren Rodwell on the phone.
Warren Rodwell, how are you doing?
Yes, not the one and only. There's more than one, even though it's not the most common name.
Are you the most famous Warren Rodwell?
At the moment, I am.
At the moment. Do you watch Lost?
Not really. I think it's probably more in the States than here.
Ah, there's a lot of Australia talk going on there.
Yeah, there's one character from Australia on there.
Yeah, a lot of it takes place in Sydney, too.
Does it? I'm too busy doing other things, particularly online. So I only watch a few minutes of the news each night. Yeah, that's about it.
All right, man. So you got a crazy story. I don't know how to begin asking you even about this. I mean... We know that you were held hostage.
Give me one word, and I'll expand.
Okay. An article I read took the angle of, they said, love.
Tell me.
Did you read that article? It was all like, a man went to the Philippines for love.
I've read everything possible.
Yeah,
I actually read stuff before it gets published now.
Oh, really? That's good.
Yeah.
How'd you end up in the Philippines? Like, that's where you were, right?
Well, let's go back to your first bit. I think the story was love took me to the Philippines or something else like that. I'm not exactly a young man anymore. And I had been married previously and lived in 50 countries in the world. Yeah, and been in 50-odd countries.
Wow.
You know, the notion of love as was portrayed in that story, that was appealing to a particular audience.
Yeah.
But we know that, objectiveness is always at the forefront of journalists' mind, isn't it?
Yeah.
they're never influenced by who owns them or who subscribes to them.
No, that doesn't happen in our world.
But, yeah, look, a different take on it all was one day I was at, I don't know, Jollibee or McDonald's or one of those sort of places, right? And there was stardust and this angel appeared, right? And then she said, what would you like to order? And I said, I hope your food tastes better than it does somewhere else in the world. and she said, well, you know, In a very much, an American accent, in American English, she told me how wonderful, the world was and it was perfect. I subsequently went somewhere else and ate. You know what I mean?
I'm so confused. So wait.
Yeah, good.
So you
went. Yeah, don't believe the stuff that's written in. There was a media blackout during it. It worked in my own country. The Philippines have actually a greater freedom of press. There was supposed to be a media blackout, but things were written, a couple of things, about me, which I read later, But fortunately, there was a media blackout. Because if you survive these ordeals, you've also got to live with all the, and the mud that gets slung at you.
Oh, okay. You?
People are saying bad things about you?
Oh, only a couple, but who cares? So that's why I mean now, I've got a book coming out next month.
Nice.
And actually, as of this weekend, there's interviews I've done particularly with a focus on the United Kingdom at the moment, because of ISIL, you know, and the things happening in the Northern Hemisphere, United Kingdom, the States, what have you, you know, North America. For those things, my comments will be relevant because I'm being asked, you know, what's my take on media blackouts? Because at the moment, it seems like there's people, particularly in the United Kingdom, getting very upset with the British government.
And they're not reporting on it?
Yeah, but this same sort of thing happened after 9/11, didn't it?
Yeah.
Hans, I want to know what... So take me back to this. So you met a woman, you moved to the Philippines with her, and then...
I met her there.
Okay.
Now, the interesting tale was, back in, about 3 years ago, I was just over 50. And I thought, clocked up another decade. Yeah, I better make another five-year plan. I thought, well, I've got a little bit of money. Not much I could really do anything anywhere else in the world because property, land in particular, it's expensive all around the world. It's just sort of out of reach for anyone. I'd been working in China as at the universities for about 10 years teaching English. China is very central, so far as the world goes. It was a good base because then I could travel a lot. But where China is in relation to Australia, about halfway is the Philippines. So I thought what I'll aim at is, setting myself up in three different countries.
All right, were you pretty well off? I mean, you're in the military, right? Like, that's.
Oh no, that was when I was, in my youth. So okay. I was self-funded.
So you had you settled down and had a house in the Philippines, is that right?
I did have, but look, how I actually got there was in 2011.
Tell me about the Philippines.
Yeah. I'd been there a couple of times before, and the beaches just don't compare. You know, like
the beaches don't compare
in the States, you've got great beaches on the West Coast.
Oh, beaches.
In Australia, we're spoiled by our beaches. Okay. Philippines is probably good if you like diving, but I still had plenty of things above water I wanted to, experience. So I went there just to fill in time because I'd been before, because I'd had a contract ended and I had a couple of months spare. So I flew, this is a good story, I flew into the Philippines just for a bit of warm weather. Yeah. And I was staying at, some pension, some guest house, and I was on my laptop and a couple of guys at the same time, a couple of Americans, they were laughing and they were saying, hey, look, this girl's been contacting me on this dating site. And it was some sort of scam that was being pulled. And I said, oh, okay, yeah. And they were rallying off. They said to me, what are you guys on about? Right? And I said, oh, there's this dating site. There's just hundreds or thousands of girls, that want to meet you.
Right.
And they said, oh, here, buddy, make a note of it. I said, oh, I've got it down. I'm here more to just sort of, visit different parts of the place,
What was the dating site?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it was Date in Asia.
Right?
Have a look at it sometime in the other ones. Hundreds or thousands,
Are they real women?
Anywhere you go, you're never really going to hook up with let's say a great beauty if you're limited to only those you meet on the street.
Right.
I'd be terrified of meeting somebody like that over there, man, because I don't even like leaving the United States. Hell, sometimes I don't even like leaving the city I live in.
That's not uncommon to hear that from an American.
Yeah.
Right? But of course...
Plus, it's terrifying, and there's some countries you go to, they even have, they have warnings, like the, what's it called if you go to the United States? There's some gov website you can go to that'll tell you, like, if you're a tourist, don't go to these countries.
Well, look, this
You went to one of those countries, didn't you?
But yeah, I'd live the life of an expat, you know.
And, you went to one of those countries, and look what happened to you, man. And see, this is why you don't go to those countries.
Well, look, to narrow it down, right? You know, if anyone's really interested, following up on my incident, they only need to Google my name. There's heaps of stuff about it, right? And except for one or two things, like, you know, when it's got the take, like, he fell madly in love and all that sort of stuff, right? All right.
So you didn't fall madly in love.
Of course not, you know.
But you married her.
Hey, look, you know, in those particular countries such as that, a lot of the Asian ones, you know, the Philippines would be exception, but I'll say China. Often, you know, the girl's first boyfriend is her husband.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and in other ones where you go into these other countries, you know, the Philippines is supposedly very devout, you know, but, you know, that's what they do. You marry. You don't have a girlfriend. You actually marry.
Okay, so that was more their custom.
Yeah, that's it. Now, you know, whether it be you or anybody you know, right? Have they ever lived with someone?
Yeah, definitely.
Hey, that's a marriage of sorts, isn't it?
Yeah, common law marriage, I think.
All right, look, check this out. We've only got like 15 minutes left, and I want to make sure that we get into this stuff. If you don't mind talking about it, like, so what?
I don't mind. You just fire away. Whatever you want to know, I'll give you a brief answer.
I love your storytelling.
Let's do it. Hit me with some quick questions. I'll give you quick answers. Then we'll see how we expand from there.
Okay.
Just tell. Well, I want you. I'm going to give you another elaboration one, but tell me like what happened when you, because you were kidnapped, and like how did that even happen? Like, what were you driving in a car? You know?
No. Look, I was at home. I had my Filipino wife and we had already split up. Mm. You know, I was there for about 6 months building a house, but, I was 2 weeks off, completing it. Cause I ended up, you know, supervising a lot of work and there's some other stuff I was getting done. The labor was cheap. You know, I was paying $4 or $5 a day for two guys working.
Right.
You know? And you didn't have the restrictions of, you know, tight, you know, local council, building regulations. But, I got absorbed in the project and, I was 2 weeks off. And yesterday I saw a friend he had his motorbike with him and they asked me, you know, did I ever ride a motorbike? I said, oh yeah, sure. Yeah. Had one there. On the day I was kidnapped, I was riding back out from going, you know, into town. I was riding back out. I thought myself on the motorbike. I thought, this is freedom. Right? I got back and the two workers, yeah, they'd finished some work that I'd assigned them. And yeah, I was beaming. And when they left, I thought, we're in the home straight. Right?
Right.
Yeah, you can see all coming together. Right? But I'd realized as I was building, I was becoming more and more aware, right, of the potential of getting kidnapped.
Hmm.
Right? And I was fortifying the place, barbed wire, more walls, you know. Look, it was a bit looking like a military post. but
that's crazy. So you're living in a city that you, like, there is a big fear of getting kidnapped. So you even started designing your house against that, like, why would they want to kidnap you? Like, just because.
Like, wherever you are, Chris, no matter what you do, right? Everything, it becomes normal after a while, doesn't it? You know?
Yeah.
Ah.
Yeah. And that's just what it was. Yeah. I got absorbed in what I was doing. And because I'd had, I'd lived in, a lot of remote areas and things go on around you, you know?
So you really weren't worried.
There's a bit of an image, Chris, for the people in the United States that we get, to get projected to us. Yeah, certainly within Australia and probably other countries that, everybody carries guns and they shoot each other. Mm-hmm. No? That happens all the time.
You think that about Americans?
Of course not. You know, that's the Philippines.
Well, most people do.
Was right. Also,
a fair amount of people do carry guns over here.
Yeah. There are a lot of gun carriers.
But America is, the United States, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's very much big on a, gun culture, Hollywood culture.
Right.
You know? things like that. My own country, ours is sort of, you know, beach culture, pub culture, yeah, sporting culture, yeah. So we don't have the other. But the Philippines was an American colony for about 100 years.
Right.
So they've got a gun culture.
I read that Abu Sayyaf group, or however you pronounce it, that kidnapped you, they've done hundreds of kidnappings like since the year 2000, so apparently they do this a lot.
Oh, it's a cottage industry.
Wow.
Okay, so let's not derail this. I derailed you enough. Okay, so...
Yeah,
you get...
but look, when I was so it was just getting on dark, Chris, right, on the particular night, 6 o'clock,
mm-hmm.
I'd finished, you know, the day's work. I went to have a shower, the water's off, you know, it's usual standards, right? Then no electricity, right? Somebody kept following me, some girl, right? Wow. Bothering me, yeah. And I said, look, you know, who are you? Because I could hear chickens crowing in the background. She said her name, and I said, how old are you? And she said, 16. I thought, oh no, right?
Right.
Because it is well known in some of these areas, especially some of the Muslim girls, they will lure a guy to some area to meet them. Then they get kidnapped.
Oh, man.
Right? But look, I'm talking to her on the phone, but the next thing I hear this noise, like a crashing. Then within, say, 30 seconds, there's two guys dressed in military greens with rifles, and they're right in front of me. And I'm stuck between a wall and a perimeter fence, a brick wall. I look at them, you know, sort of dumbfounded. Then next thing, boom, they fired a shot, and my hand was on the side, and the bullet went straight through my hand.
Oh, jeez, man.
And I said, hey, you just shot my fucking hand.
Right.
And they go, oh, police, you know, because when I growled at him, yeah, he was, he was taking back. Then I looked at the rifle of the other guy, and it had police on it. I thought, oh, this is confusing, because, you know.
Yeah.
Because normally you go along with whatever police want you, don't you? You're supposed to submit. He pulled out a pair of handcuffs, you know, threw it on, hit it on one hand, then as hard as possible on the other hand, which was, you know, it ended up being like a tourniquet.
Wow.
Yeah. And I thought, I don't remember upsetting the police recently. Right. You know, cause
right.
If in communities like that, you have to stand your ground because people will try to put things over you, you know?
Right.
Just in everyday life. You know, it's anyway, the case was I got handcuffed, sort of, you know, wedged, but I only had a pair of shorts on, nothing else. Sort of frog march over some fields into a boat. The boat got out to sea after an hour. The dude that was in charge, there's four guys, you know, the dude that was in charge, after he got an hour to sea, he put his hand up in the air like making a black power symbol signal, you know, with his hand.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, oh, you prick. Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, you're a real hero, right? Mm-hmm. But the funny thing was, like, no sooner had he done it, yeah, it did that, but then the motor exploded, the two motors on the back. There's flames. This diesel burning. They kicked it onto me, and I'm handcuffed and tied. Right? I kicked it back. They started throwing the diesel overboard.
Right? So you.
So look, so I sat on the side of the boat. I thought, as soon as the first one goes, I'm going in backwards myself.
Right.
Right. So I had the opportunity to be killed when I was shot, then with the boat exploding, then drowned. But after they sorted themselves out, they got back in the boat. And they had to then paddle for about 6 hours at night.
That made you paddle the boat?
Oh, I did offer. I said, oh, come on, guys, give me, let me help you.
That's nice of you.
Yeah, well, you know, but then they had their cell phone. I thought they had a GPS. They were lost and couldn't make any contact.
It sounds like they're a bunch of clowns.
Yeah, a bunch of knuckleheads.
Oh, yeah, they were.
So,
down... is quite calling them buffoons. Somebody else on a television interview called that. But yeah, these guys, you know, they'd be lucky if they had fifth grade elementary education.
So. They show up, they shoot you in the hand right off the bat, which was probably not intentional. Like, I don't even know why they would fire the gun.
He was trigger happy. Yeah.
They accidentally shoot you in the hand, and then they're going to have to deal with you. You know, like, do they have a medic? I mean, like, you know, like, now they got a wounded guy they're trying to kidnap. And then you said they drag you, like, a mile you know, made you walk through marsh or something and then put you on a fucking boat.
And one guy kept hitting me in the back of the head with his rifle bar in the legs. And I thought, you know, and he's saying, you know, don't run. Well, you know, we'll shoot you, we'll kill you and all this sort of thing. Then another guy, some slimy little turd there, you know, he's beside me saying, I am your friend. And I say, look, oxygen. Yeah, I'm moving fast and I'm losing blood. I can't talk to you.
Right.
Because he's saying, look, I am your friend. And he says, he's basically, do you have a phone? And some other time he said to me, do you have any money in the house? Mm. Yeah, the whole thing was they thought I had this big bag of like $2 million.
So they kidnapped you because they thought you were going to give him money.
Oh, that's what it was all about.
Okay.
Yeah. I was close to death for about a week, you know, because moved around and everything.
So yeah, they throw you on the boat, you're bleeding, you're tied up, then the boat explodes.
The motor.
Was it sinking or was it just powerless? And were you like on a river or were you in the ocean?
Oh, we were in the open.
Oh my God.
Yeah, that's very scary.
Asleep. Someone did comment later to me, some spokesman from their group that came and saw me. When I told him, he said, oh, it's a wonder the Navy didn't see it. But the sea was very warm, and I thought, this is good for my wound, because I'm cleaning out the hand, and the handcuffs acted like a tourniquet.
Oh, okay.
Man. Oh, but these guys had no idea what that only thing was, the guy that was in charge, it was obvious he had military experience. Mm. From the military point of view, what he did was good, yeah. But I said to him the next day, we're hiding somewhere because we could see soldiers, right? And we're within close distance, and we're sort of heads just above water in some, you know, water somewhere on an island. And when the guy said, I said, yeah, I know it was accidental, you shot me. Yeah.
Mm.
That was it. He was just all pumped up. But at that time, I figured out there's five stages. There's got to be the capture, right? The capture, the hiding, you know, then there's got to be a demand, then there's negotiation, then you've got to have a resolve, actually six. Yeah, then there has to be a release.
Mm-hmm.
These guys have no set pattern. They don't know what they're doing.
Man.
So what do you mean you were in the water? Like, so they had you, so once you got closer to land, you said you were like hiding.
Oh, look, Hey, we were in islands. I was in 28 different camps. Mm. We moved around from islands to islands.
That's kind of smart.
And I was mostly, except for about 2 months that I was up in mountains, I was in mangrove island jungles on islands, yeah, in the autonomous region of Muslim autonomous region of Mindanao.
Why were they moving you so frequently?
Boat. You know, one is, you know, there is military presence there, and the the Filipino military is aided by the states with their military. So it's an ongoing thing. Look, before I was captured, and it just put it down the fact that I had money available to buy something, people locally never really told me anything about it. You know, they all seemed to know nothing, but I guess it's just that, you know, it'd been going on for a while. But I was just told by everyone, oh, this is such a safe place. And in comparison, my local wife, she lived in a village, you know, four to 8 miles away. Her place was like terrorist capital of the world, you know.
What,
in local standards, I was in a relatively safe area.
What was a typical day like in captivity?
Empty.
Empty, like, what time did they wake you up? Did they slap you around and stuff, or were they kind of nice to you? Or...
What would they want to slap me around for?
I don't know, you know.
Oh, yeah, what do you, because I had some guy one time, we'll kill you. You know, that concerned me for the first 3 months.
Yeah, weren't you worried that they were going to cut your head off? Because I read that same group.
I did, but the thing is, you know, the old Darwinian thing, you know, adapts, migrate or die. Right. There was no way I could escape, you know, because I was so remote. I wouldn't have been able to swim, and I wouldn't know where I was. Yeah,
that sounds like Lost.
Everybody locally was controlled by some form of terrorist. For the group that held me, we did not just have an enemy so far as the military or the police went. We also had other rebels and civilians, because you know other groups, if they could could grab me themselves, the work's already done. They could sell me. So it looks like I was on sold to a lot of groups. And, you know, I read a comment the other day, you know, that, you know, some observation, it was coming from the States, that say with ISIL, you know, when they get these, when they get their hostages, that they outsource the actual activity of the kidnapping itself.
Oh.
Like, you don't pull out trained, you know, trained fighters and send them off into a, you know, a civilian area, do you? You
know? Right.
Yeah. So and were they Islamic terrorists? Because that's what a lot of the headlines read.
Oh, yeah, they were. Yeah, these are Al-Qaeda and now ISIL affiliated. But it's like living in the Old Testament. To them, and this is significant. I mean, I got to observe things. My typical day was empty, completely empty. Days, hours, months. They get, you know, 15 months of it.
Wow.
You know? So you got to you got to keep your mind occupied. But living in the Old Testament, my thing for them, they do not see themselves as criminal or what they do as being criminal. But yeah, this really, I was lucky. Firstly, being male, and that it was only kidnapping. Because it was the kidnapping for ransom, they've got to outlay, you know, an expense like to pay for blown up motors, don't they?
Right, right.
And food and that sort of thing. And I would have come into contact with these 100 different members. They only have about 400 in total.
So you weren't kept with just the five people. You were passed around to different people constantly.
Oh, those guys were only responsible for my capture.
Oh, okay.
Then it was usually local, local members of the terrorist group wherever we went. Yeah, you know, they were assigned to being the guards. Yeah, of the prison camp. I was not to speak at all. You know, and
did you build any relationships with any of those people at all, or was?
Yeah, you could say so. Look, you know, no matter where you are, it's a matter of survival, isn't it? You know, and then I saw a saying recently, you know, that somebody's true character, yeah, is really determined by what they do when no one's watching.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't it? You know, now, if you're in this sort of survival situation, you know, your biggest battle for survival is against the elements.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Isn't it? Yeah. And yeah, it sometimes would be a bit musical, you know, where our stomachs, because we're all, yeah, they'd all be rumbling from hunger.
Oh, so the people that kidnapped you didn't even have food.
No, but this was
that's ridiculous. Pretty.
This is, and we, of course, we had to hide. We would be so remote. In many cases, we didn't even have water available.
That's bad. Because
we had people out of the way. Yeah. I lost, yeah. I looked like a prisoner of war when I was released, yeah.
Right. How much money did you end up paying for the ransom? I know we read that.
Oh, at the time it worked out to be about $100,000.
Oh, okay. Is it true that your wife had to sell her house to pay that?
Nah, that's not true at all.
Okay. I'm really glad to hear that.
I thought they said it was your parents or something. Oh no, your parents were
passed.
Parents
were dead.
Yeah.
My parents were dead. Right?
How did they?
No, my brother and sister, and some of my own money, we put that together. Right? But the thing that stands out with this is the original demand is $2 million. I did say to him at the beginning, I go, you'd be better off asking for Australian dollars. Yeah, it's higher than the US dollars at the moment. it's not now. Now, look, you know, when you've got, you know, because. Like I said, I've been out in the world a fair bit. You know, I don't have problems dealing with people of different nationalities.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, imagine you're one of my captors and I spring that one on you.
Right. You know? I'd be upset.
Then I'd say to her, hey, look, you know, yeah, look, all this cost that's up front, you know, you guys are going to have to, you know, yeah, your commander, is he a businessman? And the guy said, oh, no, he's not. I go, oh, fuck me, dead. What am I dealing with? You're trying to deal with, yeah, politicians, yeah, and international politics, and, yeah, international crime, and what am I dealing with? a peasant or a farmer? This is going to take a long time.
What exactly did they tell you? Like, what did you know was happening? Like, you knew they wanted.
They usually didn't know.
Okay. So you didn't.
And
so
they
the
didn't
peop-
communicate. Now, one guy, a guard, he was slipping some information. It ended up being a bit like you see, like a movie thing. He'd tell me something, and he said, "Look, here are the names of the leaders of the syndicate." And there were about 10 or 11. I said, okay. And we had to, he'd help me to go to the, to go and use the toilet somewhere, you know. Mm-hmm. You know, he'd dig a hole for me. Because, going to the, emptying your bowels once or twice a day is something we take for granted.
Right.
You
know? Yeah, definitely.
In these areas, people maybe every 3 or 4 days. My record was going for a fortnight because I had no food in my stomach.
Oh, wow. 2 weeks
you went
without
2 weeks
poo.
With no poo?
Yeah. Wow. Oh, yeah. Hey, but I'll tell you what, though. By the time I eventually did, these guys could never really understand the dark humor. I would say this is the mother of all turds, but they're too young to remember Saddam Hussein back in about 1990 saying he was going to have the mother of all wars. Yeah.
So you're cracking jokes to these guys. Did they find it funny or did they get upset when you did that?
Oh, no. Look, even in my time when I was in China teaching, you know, the Chinese, you know, they're very logical in the way they think. They would usually say, you know, the professors around me and students say, oh, you are very humor. Mm. So, yeah, humorous. But like I said, you know, yeah, I'm lucky, I think. It's part of being Australian as well. We tend to view things that way.
Yeah. You sound really positive when you talk about this, but we just played the clip of one of your videos before we got you on the phone here. And, yeah, I mean, you sounded really distraught. You know, like were they letting you sleep? Like, I mean, how, like, yeah, like, I mean, basically, did you think that there was no way you were getting out of that?
Oh, eventually, yes. Absolutely. There was one about 12 months or so they'd come. You'll never give me notice when they go to do one of these movies of proof of life. Mm-hmm. You know? I made a statement like, you know, I don't trust Abbasayef. I don't trust the Australian government. I don't trust anyone. You know?
Yeah, I remember hearing that.
And I don't expect to be released, or not this year. Because so far as I was knew, firstly, I was not a 22-year-old female, right? They'd been kidnapped. So, you know, who cares what happens, to you? Yeah, I didn't, I wasn't working for any company, so they didn't have nobody had a legal obligation for me, you know? I'd made the decision to be there. I thought, it was my choice.
So you just thought you were done for.
Yeah, but I thought, well, look, I put this in out there quite often that because I was in restricted areas, with the loss of weight, it was a comment made after I was released that I'd aged by about 20 or 30 years, which would have maybe looked like I was 75 or 85.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, once you don't have any exercise, it's like a geriatric, you know, and you've got the loose skin hanging off you.
Wow.
I'd lay down, and when I'd lay on the side, because of being a hammock, you'd have to have it because the water would rise, and you have rats and everything around you. But, you know, my rib cage would rub against my hip bone.
Oh, wow.
And I'd lost all the flesh, the external flesh. And when I was released, one doctor said to me that, I would have been, give it another 3 to 6 months, I would have lost all the padding around my internal organs.
Wow.
Jeez. Right? So these people really were dumb. Like, I mean, they, because you're losing value. Oh, but, hey, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But the upside of it was, Chris, you know, I'd see so many of them over a period of time, I'd observe their patterns, and their behavior, and split them into different categories of groups, and I'd know what they were. You know, when they'd come along, if there was any could speak English, I could let them know and comfort them or console them as to what they're going through. Some of them, I saw them, violently ill. There was a few that went crazy. For one stage, we're up in actually a battle zone. Wow. We're stuck there. That was.
So you got to to witness them just all freaking out and going through their ups and downs and.
Oh, yeah. And now when you see someone that is supposedly in a position of superiority over you, you just see it, you think, yeah, yeah, you guys got nothing on me. Right. Yeah. And it's fascinating to see what the body can do, yeah, what it can cope with. Yeah.
Yeah.
If I had had any form of illness, like, say diabetes or whatever, right? The lack of medication, and this is what happens. This is why people die on these things. Or they do something stupid, like rush at a gun or whatever. Yeah. And the individual they're doing it towards, right, is not necessarily representing the group. That person is defending themselves, aren't they?
Yeah.
Yeah. But look, for the most part, I accept it. Well, like I said, you get things become normal once you go somewhere. You know, you go away on vacation. After 2 or 3 days, you forget where you come from, don't you? You know, and just settle into where you are.
Well, I want to kind of get to how it ended. So they originally wanted $2 million. Did they just publicly ask for it, or were they telling you to make arrangements? And then
good question, Chris. Yeah, I'd get somebody come to me and he'd tell me this guy was so dopey, you know. He'd tell me things and he says, "Oh, look, do you have any friends that we can make contact with? You know, and they can make contact with someone else, like any fellow, you know, Australians or whatever." Yeah. Now, do you think I'm going to give the name of any friends in another village?
No way.
Go and hey, call up my good buddy Chris Brake. Come around and see him, will you? Like he's white. He's got flesh on him.
Right.
And he's probably got a few relatives to go along with it. You can bump off it in a van. But...
wow.
This spokesman, he'd come out and see me, and he'd tell me, "Oh, it's cold here last night." I go, "Oh, you're soft. You guys are soft." And they say, "We're hungry." Go, "What happened to you? Don't you guys know how to live off the land or the jungle at all? You got coconuts in the trees." Yeah. The Chinese, you see old people walk into a field, they come out with a bag full of grass and make soup out of it, you know? And they eat everything. But these ones, they're selective.
What did they feed you? What did you eat when you ate?
The best I got was usually a small bowl of boiled rice.
Wow.
Once a day. There might have been some fish bones. A can of sardines. Like that would have to be split up with 3 or 4 of us.
Were you the only hostage held?
In my situation, yes. That made it unique and probably was a, in a way, probably in some sense because of the isolation. Yeah. I really had to, switch off my emotions, you know, and numbing myself. Because the mind will play, nasty tricks on you if you let it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Who got it down to 9 grand? Or was it 9 grand? How much?
90,000.
90,000? Shit, that's still a lot of money.
Yeah, it is.
100,000. But look, what it represented was 5% of the original amount.
Right.
Okay. Yeah. So in local terms, I checked with the Guinness Book of Records, but they can't give me one for this. But in local terms here in my own country, I am the longest held Australian captive outside of wartime.
Yeah. Huh? That's
intense. Now, to tack on a bit on the end, I'm also for the smallest percentage paid.
Are you proud of that?
Making deals.
Oh, well, yeah. I'm in history books.
Wow, I'm you in are Wikipedia. In history books. That's crazy, man.
You know, I don't... why not? Look, I still owe my brother and sister about 75 grand. I've got to get some publicity and somehow to make money to give it back to them.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah, that's kind of a bittersweet way to look at it because I'm sure that is happening. You know what I mean?
Yeah, well, look, they're not short of a quid or short of a dollar. Yeah, my brother and sister, because they are a bit older than me, but...
You've got a good story you can sell. You know what I mean? So that's pretty.
Got what, sorry?
A good story you can sell.
Yes.
No.
I've been doing lots in that regard, but There's something I was going to just saying earlier about being in the Old Testament and that sort of thing. What I got a glimpse of was kidnapping is really only a very small activity or component of the greater industry of human trafficking.
Mm.
And when I would get that glimpse and sort of consider that, that is really scary shit. Right?
Yeah.
And in the country it happens on. I was kidnapped on my own. So somebody I met when I came back had been kidnapped with somebody else. I said to him, I said, look, that would have to be difficult to be able to see, you know, somebody else, the effects it's having on somebody else. It'd be mirroring things. And gee, you'd have to end up hating the other person, wouldn't you? The other, cause being, yeah, you know, the other person, the other prisoner,
mm-hmm.
you know, because they would probably make comments on your behavior as well.
What do you think they would have done? Did they ever tell you what they were going to do if they didn't get the money? They threatened to sell you?
They'd made threats. I'd have someone coming to me and, you know, they say to me, oh, we're going to kill you. And if you don't, yeah, pay this ransom, I say, hey, look, you know, you're telling the wrong person.
Right.
That's strange that they would kill you. You'd think they would sell you.
Just go and look amongst the rags I've got, you know. Yeah, just help yourself to what the money I've got.
You sound like the funniest prisoner ever.
Now, to wrap this up.
So, on the very basic level, what I found, if you call it bonding, like what I see, look, I've never really had a problem getting along with people generally and in different parts of the world. I think, in hindsight, with my overall attitude or the type of character that I am, under the circumstances, I think they generally respected me. As a mature man.
What did they do at the end? Like, did they tell you you were getting released? Did you know the money came through, or did they just dump you somewhere?
I didn't know anything. I was never really told, you know, and that was a thing where you could never imagine if it was going to happen. But at the end, somebody came into the area I was and he sort of came in and he said, oh, look, yeah, I was told the guards were leaving. Yeah, but they could have just been naturally getting changed. But then the guy said, look, you're being released, brother. Then he leant forward and hugged me. Yeah.
Hmm.
Wow.
And, you know, he was a bit of a sentimental Latino. And I said, look, what do I take with me? But when we got in the boat, this is the sort of thing that happened before. So, you know, I had an old grandmother sort, you know, that died long ago. And I sort of kept sort of, you know, beseeching her, yeah, take me all the way, because you never know what's going to happen through the ocean, and that was it. I was sort of then transferred to a smaller boat into a port area, dropped off, and the other boats got out to sea fast. Then the information I was given was the guy said to me, "Look, when you get to sea, when you get on land, walk and say, please help me."
Mm.
Yeah? And it was just after midnight. Now, here's a nice touch. Right? I had to climb up this sort of embankment. It looked like some rabid dog was going to attack me. I thought, I'm going to have a fight with a dog. Right? But I walked along. There was no one there. Yeah. But anyway, I got up the road a bit. It was a fishing area, port. Looked at these gates and the city. I was a bit surprised to see what it was. Some overfed civilian or whatever, Port Authority, the gate. You don't trust people who got weight on them when you're in a survival situation, right? Or if they got any colour in their hair, or nail polish on. But I looked up and I said to this guy, I was just packing it in. He said, "Are you a tourist?" I said, "Oh no, I've just been released, you know, prisoner." "Oh really?" And I said, "Hey, is it after midnight?" He said, "Oh yeah, it's 12:30." I said, "Oh great, it's my dead mother's birthday." Now, the whole thing, what it come down to was I had decided, because I was in a lot of pain with my feet, you know, I had deadened nerve endings and that, and it was going up my body, you know. My hand, I just lived with for about 2 years, having a broken bone in my hand, but in total. But I thought one time, you know, like, this is never ending, you know, and if my suffering, the physical suffering, gets beyond unbearable, yeah, I might have to consider killing myself.
Wow.
So what I thought was, my mother died when she was 55 and 3 months old. And I thought to myself, I'll wait. I'll defer any further thought on that until I'm 55 and 3 months plus 1 day, which would end up being about, 5 months later. But I thought, then, if it's unbearable, I'll top myself off then, but I'll take a few of them out with me. Why not have some fun? Because, what could I lose?
Right.
But like I said, the doctor mentioned to me afterward, I probably wouldn't have survived physically, beyond 6 months anyway.
Well, we're really glad you made it, man. It's quite a story.
Yeah, it is. Yeah,
thanks for coming on and sharing it with us, man. Warren Rodwell, right. what's the name of your new book?
It's very creative. 472 Days Captive of the Abbasiyev - The Survival of Australian Warren Rodwell, written by Dr. Bob East and published by Cambridge Scholars Publishing from the United Kingdom. Well, so this is going to be used as a... the biography, it's also got a lot of historical geographical. This is going to be a standard book in the universities around the world.
Nice.
Wow, man. That's impressive.
Yep. It is, yeah.
You're a strong man, sir. You really are. Thanks for, thanks for talking to us.
No worries. See you later.
Have a good night. Wow.
That guy's quite a strong soul, man.
That was Warren Rodwell. Yeah.
You can find him on Twitter, Warren Rodwell, @WarrenRodwell. He's also got a WordPress blog, fatforeigner.wordpress.com. So he's also got a bunch of memes online that I guess he thinks they're funny. He has a good sense of humor, that guy.
He shares his memes. I wonder if he makes those.
Yeah, I don't know. It'd be funny if he did.
Surprisingly, he was a delight to talk to, man.
He really was.
He's a guy who was held victim, held hostage, and yet he was a delight and he was funny.
Yeah.
Whereas we talk to comedians, like say Nathan Allen, the guy's a complete misanthrope. You know what I mean? The maniac of magic. You'd think that guy would have some laughs, but no, he was kind of a jerk, but Warren Rodwell was a fucking delight.
Yeah.
Who would have thought?
It's those Australians, man. They have a good outlook.
Yeah. This was the Chris Briggs Show with John Rapp. And I want to thank Darren Snyder from Indian Tune and Frank from RadioFubar.com, Mike WFOD, Lotus Cast, 405 Media, Marty O Show,
Ron at Radio Max Music, Jeremy at Couch Potato Nation, Mark at Tangent Bound Network. Big shout out to all of you.
And one day we will have a list of names, because believe it or not, we're just pulling these out of the air.
We'll get a list next time, and no Skype sounds next time either. Sarah should be here too.
Oh yeah, return of Spitfire Sarah.